The Bridal Path. As soon as Beauty opened her eyes from sleep, she could feel a new excitement in the castle. Torches everywhere brilliantly illuminated the slaves' hall, and all about her princes and princesses were receiving elaborate preparation. The hair of the princesses was being combed and studded with flowers. The princes were being polished with oil, their stiff curls combed just as carefully as those of the young women. But Beauty was hastily taken from bed by Leon, who seemed uncommonly excited. "It's festival night, Beauty," he said, "and I've allowed you to sleep for a long time. We must hurry."
"Festival night?" she whispered.
But she was already being placed on the table for grooming. At once he parted her hair and started to braid it. She felt the air on her neck and hated it, and she realized he had started the braids very high on her head so she would look even more girlish than Lady Juliana. A long black leather thong was braided into the hair on both sides and knotted around the ends with a little brass bell affixed to it. When Leon dropped the braids, they were heavy against Beauty's breasts, and her neck was exposed as well as all of her face.
"Charming. Charming," Leon mused with his usual air of satisfaction.
"But now, your boots." And slipping her into a pair of high black leather boots, he told her to stand in them while he bent to lace them tightly to her knees, and then smooth the leather around her ankles until it was cleaving like a glove there. Not until Beauty lifted her foot did she realize each boot was fitted at toe and heel with a horseshoe. And the tops were hard and strong so that nothing could hurt her toes.
"But what is happening? What is the bridal path?" she asked in a great fluster.
"Shh," Leon said, pinching and prodding her breasts to give them, as he said, some color. He then glossed Beauty's eyelids and eyelashes with oil and smoothed a little rouge into her lips and into her nipples. Beauty drew back instinctively, but his touch was sure and quick, and he took no notice of her. But what bothered her most was that her body felt cool and vulnerable. She could feel the sheathing of leather against her calves, and all the rest of her felt worse than naked. It was more terrible than any of the smaller adornments.
"What is going to take place?" she asked again. But Leon had thrust her over the end of the table and now oiled her buttocks vigorously.
"Well healed," he said.
"The prince must have guessed last night you would run tonight, and he's spared you." Beauty felt his strong fingers plying her flesh, and a dread came over her.
So they would spank her, but they always did.
Only it would be in the presence of many others. Every humiliating spank she had received before the eyes of others had cost her dearly, though she knew now she would suffer any amount of paddling for the prince. But she had not really been given a hard, thorough spanking for the pleasure of others since the inn on the road where the innkeeper's daughter had spanked her for the soldiers and the common people at the windows.
But it must come, she thought.
And a vision of the court watching it as some ritual caused her to feel an undeniable curiosity that soon enough gave way to panic.
"My lord, please tell me."
Amid the crowd about her, she saw other girls with braided hair and boots, so she was not alone. And there were princes being fitted with boots also. Through it all, there moved a handful of young princes on their hands and knees, polishing boots as quickly as they could, their own buttocks raw, their necks encircled by a little cord of leather to which was attached a sign that Beauty could not read. But now, as Leon brought her up standing again and gave some finishing touches to her lips and eyelashes, one of these princes was now buffing her boots, though he was weeping. His buttocks were as red as it could have been, and she saw the sign about his neck said, "I am in disgrace," in small letters. A page approached and gave the prince a sound crack with a belt to hurry him on to another. But Beauty had no time to think of it. Leon had affixed the accursed little brass bells to her nipples. She shuddered almost instinctively, but they were firmly attached, and he told her to fold her arms behind her back tightly. "Now forward. Only you are to bend your knees slightly and to march, lifting each knee high," he told her. She started, awkwardly, reluctant to obey, but then she saw all about her other princesses marching in an almost sprightly manner, their breasts bouncing gracefully as they moved into the corridor. She hurried, the heavy boots difficult for her to lift with any decorum. But soon she had fallen into a rhythm, and Leon was walking beside her. "Now, darling," he said, "the first time is always difficult. Festival night is frightening. I had thought some easier duty would be yours this first time, but the queen has ordered you especially for the bridal path, and the Lady Juliana will drive you." "Ah, but what—" "Shh, or I shall have to gag you, and that will very much displease the queen, as well as make your mouth quite ugly." All the girls were now in a long room, and through narrow windows on one wall, Beauty could see the garden. Torches flared in the dark trees, throwing an uneven glare on the leafy boughs above them. The line of girls formed right beside these windows, and Beauty was now able to see more of what lay beyond them. There was a great roar as of many people conversing, laughing. And then, to her shock, Beauty saw slaves all through the garden positioned in various ways for their torment. On high stakes here and there were strapped princes and princesses, painfully contorted, their ankles bound to the stakes, their shoulders bent over the tops of them. They seemed no more than ornaments, the torchlight causing their twisted limbs to glow, the hair of the princesses falling free in the air behind them. Surely they could see only the sky above, though all could see their miserable contortions. And everywhere beneath were the lords and ladies, the light falling upon a long embroidered cloak here, a pointed hat there with a veil trailing airily from it. There were hundreds in the garden, these tables placed far back into the trees, as far as Beauty could see in all directions. Beautifully adorned slaves moved about, pitchers in hand, little gold chains fixed to their breasts. The princes adorned with gold rings on their erect organs. They hurried to fill the goblets, pass the platters of food. And as in the great hall, there was music. The line of girls before Beauty grew restless. Beauty could hear one girl crying as her groom tried to comfort her. But most of the others were obedient. Here and there a groom rubbed more oil into plump buttocks or whispered in a princess's ear, and Beauty's sense of apprehension deepened. She did not want to look into the yard. It frightened her too much, but she could not prevent herself. And each time she saw some new horror. A great wall to the left was adorned with spread-eagled slaves, and on a huge serving cart she saw slaves fixed to the giant wheels, turned upside down over and over as the cart was moved forward. "But what will happen to us?" Beauty whispered. The girl in line before her, who could not be quieted, was now hanging by her ankle from the hand of a strong page who punished her swiftly. Beauty gasped to see her spanked, her braids falling to the floor beneath her. "Shh, it is best for her," Leon said. "It will exhaust her fear and drain her slightly, and she will be all the more free on the bridal path."
"But tell me."
"You must be still. You will see the others first and understand, and as we draw nearer to your turn, I shall instruct you. Remember, this is a special night of high festivity. But the queen will be watching, and the prince will be furious if you fail him." Beauty's eyes returned to the garden. The great cart of steaming food had moved along, and for the first time she saw the distant fountain. Here, too, were bound slaves, their arms linked as they stood knee-deep in the water, surrounding the central pillar, its sparkling flow pouring down over them. Their bodies glistened under the water. The groom beside the girl in front of Beauty laughed softly and said that someone was miserable to be missing festival night,
but it was her own fault.
Surely, Leon agreed when the groom glanced back to him.
They are talking about Princess Lisetta, he told Beauty, who is still in the Hall of Punishments, and cursing, no doubt, to miss the excitement.
To miss the excitement? But in spite of her fear, Beauty nodded at this as if it were perfectly natural.
A calm descended upon her in which she heard her own heart and felt her body as if there were limitless time in which to know it. She felt the sheathing of the leather boots, the click of her horseshoes on the stones, the air on her neck, her belly. And she thought, yes, this is what I am. So I should not wish to miss it either. Yet I rebel in my soul. Why do I rebel?
Oh, I despise that miserable Lord Gerhardt. Why must he drive me?
Asked the girl before her in a low voice. The groom said something that made her laugh.
But he's so slow, she said, savoring every moment. And I like to run.
The groom laughed at her. She went on,
and what do I get out of it? The most miserable spanking. I could take the spanking if I could only cut loose and run.
You want everything, said the groom.
And what do you want? Don't tell me you don't like it when I'm covered with welts and almost blistered.
The groom laughed. He had a cheerful face and was small of build, keeping his hands clasped behind his back, though his chestnut hair fell down over his eyes slightly.
My dear, I love everything about you, he said.
And so does Lord Gerhardt.
Now say something to comfort Leon's little pet. She's so frightened.
The girl turned and Beauty saw her pert face, eyes slanting at the ends somewhat like the eyes of the queen, but they were smaller, with no cruelty. She smiled with full little red lips.
Don't be frightened, Beauty, she said.
But you have no need for comfort from me. You have the prince. I have only Lord Gerhardt. A great current of laughter passed through the garden. The musicians were playing loudly with much strumming of their lutes and tapping of the tambourines. And then Beauty quite distinctly heard the thunder of hooves approaching. A rider shot past the windows, his cape flying out behind him, his horse bridled in silver and gold, which made a streak of light as he rushed forward.
Oh, at last, said the girl in front of Beauty.
Other riders were coming, and they were making a line all along the wall that almost blocked Beauty's view of the garden. She could not bear to look up at them. But she did, and saw they were splendid ladies and lords, and each held the reins of the horse in his or her left hand, and in the right, a long, rectangular black paddle.
Now, into the room, said Lord Gregory.
And the slaves who had waited in a long line were ushered into the next chamber, where they stood directly facing the arched door to the garden. Beauty could see now that a young prince was first in line, and she saw that mounted lord, his horse pawing the dirt before the archway. Leon moved Beauty a little to the side.
Now you can see better, he said.
And she saw the prince clasp his hands behind his neck and step forward. A trumpet sounded, catching Beauty off guard, so she gasped. And a cry rose from the crowd behind the archway. The young slave was forced out and at once greeted by the black leather paddle of the lord on horseback. Immediately the slave commenced to run. The mounted lord rode right beside him, and the sound of the paddle came loud and distinct as the murmur of the crowd seemed to rise and mingle itself with faint ripples of laughter. Beauty was aghast as she saw the two figures disappear down the path together.
I cannot do it. I cannot, she thought. I cannot be made to run. I will fall. I will fall to the ground and cover myself. To be tied, to be bound in front of so many was dreadful enough. But this is impossible.
But another rider was already in place, and a young princess was forced suddenly forward. The paddle found its mark. The princess let out a little cry and was immediately running desperately fast along the bridle path, the rider after her, spanking her fiercely. Before Beauty could take her eyes off them, another slave was on the way, and her eyes blurred as she saw far ahead a dim line of torches outlining the path that seemed to go on and on through the trees, past an endless vista of feasting lords and ladies.
"Now, Beauty, you see what is required. And don't cry. If you're crying, it will be harder. You must put your mind on running fast, keeping your hands on your neck. Here, place them there now. And you must lift your knees high and try not to squirm to escape the paddle. It will catch you no matter what you do. But I warn you, no matter how many times I tell you that, you will find yourself trying to run away from it. That is the trick. But remain graceful."
Another slave was running, and then another. And the young girl who had cried earlier was upended again, dangling as she was spanked.
"Dreadful of her," said the princess in front of Beauty. "She'll be spanked hard enough in a moment."
Suddenly, there were only three slaves before Beauty and the archway.
"Oh, but I can't," she cried to Leon.
"Nonsense, my darling. Follow the path. It will unwind slowly before you. You will see its turns well in advance, and stop only if you see the slave before you stopped. Now and then the line is stopped, for as the slaves come before the queen, they must stop for praise or condemnation. She is on a great pavilion to your right. But don't glance at her when you step out, or the paddle will catch you off guard."
"Oh, please, I shall faint. I can't, I can't."
"Beauty,
Beauty,"
said the pretty princess in front of her. "Just follow my example." And Beauty realized with horror there was no one left but this girl. But then that one who had just been spanked was placed before her and ushered out to the waiting paddle. The girl was frantic, sobbing, but she kept her hands on her neck, and soon she was running beside her laughing rider, a tall young lord who lifted his arm way back as he spanked her. Suddenly, another rider appeared, the elderly Lord Gerhardt, and as Beauty watched in terror, the pretty princess ran out to receive the first blows and run with graceful lifts of her knees beside him. But for all her complaints, the lord's horse seemed to move terribly fast, and the paddle was loud and merciless. Beauty was forced to the threshold of the garden. For the first time, she stared at the true immensity of the court, the dozens upon dozens of tables that sprawled out on the green and appeared in great numbers in the forest beyond it. Everywhere were servants and naked slaves. It was, perhaps, three times the size she had judged from the windows. She felt tiny, insignificant, for all her terror, lost and without a name or a soul suddenly. "What am I now?" she might have thought, but she could not think. And as if in nightmare, she saw all the faces of those at the nearest tables, lords and ladies twisted to see the bridal path. And far to her right loomed the pavilion of the queen, canopied and festooned with flowers. She was gasping for breath, and when she looked up and saw the splendid mounted figure of Lady Juliana, her eyes filled with tears of gratitude that it was she, though she knew Lady Juliana would spank her perhaps all the harder to do her duty. The lovely lady's braids were done with the same silver that threaded her shapely gown. She seemed made for the side saddle in which she sat, and the handle of her paddle was laced to her wrist. She was smiling. There was no time to see more, to think more. Beauty was running forward, feeling the crunch of the bridle path under her horseshoes, hearing the stomp of hooves beside her. And though she thought it was not possible to endure such degradation, she felt the first cracking blow to her naked buttocks. It was so forceful it almost knocked her off balance. The stinging pain spread out from it like a warm fire, and Beauty realized she was rushing forward. The stomp of hooves deafened her, and the paddle caught her again and again, almost lifting her and forcing her forward. She realized she was crying out loud through her clenched teeth, her tears making a blur of the torches that clearly defined the path before her. And she was running, running fast towards the enclosing trees, though she could not escape the paddle.
It was as Leon had warned her. It caught her over and over, and each time there was some hideous surprise because she was trying to outrun it. She could smell the horse, and when she widened her eyes and gasped for breath, she saw everywhere, on either side of her, those torch-lit and abundantly decked supper tables. Lords and ladies drank, supped, laughed, turned to glance at her, perhaps, she did not know. She was sobbing and running frantically from the blows which came harder and harder. "Oh, please, please, Lady Juliana," she wanted to cry out, but she did not dare to ask for mercy. The path had turned, and she was following it only to see more and more nobles banqueting, and dimly before her the figure of the other rider and slave who had greatly outdistanced her. Her throat was burning as much as her sore flesh. "Faster, beauty, faster, and lift your legs higher," Lady Juliana sang out over the wind. "Ah, yes, better, my darling." And there came another shock of pain, and another. The paddle found her thighs with a hard, uplifting slap, and then seemed to scoop up her buttocks. Beauty gave an open-mouthed cry because she could not stop it, and soon she heard her own wordless pleas as clearly as the horse's hooves pounding the cinders. Her throat constricted, even the soles of her feet burned, but nothing hurt as much as the quick, strong paddling. Lady Juliana seemed possessed of some evil genius, catching Beauty from one angle and then another, lifting her up again with the blows, smacking her hard, and then three or four times in rapid succession. The path had made another turn, and far ahead Beauty saw the walls of the castle. They were returning now. They would soon reach the queen's canopied pavilion. Beauty felt as if all the breath had gone out of her. Yet mercifully, Lady Juliana slowed her pace, as did the riders before her. Beauty ran more slowly, knees high, and felt a great relaxation course through her. She could hear her own choking sobs and feel the tears slipping down her face, and yet a puzzling sensation was passing over her. She felt suddenly calmed in some way. She did not comprehend it. She felt no rebellion suddenly, though the obligation to rebel prodded her. Perhaps she was only exhausted. But she knew only that she was a naked slave of the court, and anything might be done to her. Hundreds of lords and ladies watched her with amusement. It was nothing to them, and she was only one of many, and it had all been done 1,000 times and would be done again, and she must do her best, or take her place, tethered to that beam in the Hall of Punishments, suffering for the amusement of no one. "Lift your knees, my precious darling," Lady Juliana said to her as they were moving slowly now. "And, oh, if you could only see how exquisite you are. You have done splendidly." Beauty tossed her head. She felt the heavy braids fall against her back. And suddenly, when the paddle struck her, she felt herself move so languidly with it. It was as if this strange relaxation were softening her all over. Is that what they had meant when they said that the pain would soften her? Yet she feared this relaxation, this despair. Was it despair? She did not know. She had no dignity in this moment. She saw herself as Lady Juliana must surely have seen her. And it seemed she almost preened as she imagined this, tossing her head again, pushing her breasts out proudly. "That's it! Lovely! Lovely!" Lady Juliana called out. The other rider had disappeared. The horse picked up its pace. The paddle struck Beauty violently again and drove her through the clustered tables as the crowd grew thicker, the castle coming closer. And suddenly they had stopped before the pavilion. Lady Juliana turned her mount to the side and with small, prodding spanks brought Beauty beside her to attention. Beauty did not look up, but she could see the long garlands of flowers, the dim white vision of the canopy ballooning gently in the breeze,
and a host of figures seated behind the festooned railing of the pavilion. Her body seemed consumed with fire. She could not catch her breath, and then she could hear the conversation above, the queen's pure, icy voice, and others laughing. Her throat was raw, her buttocks pulsing with pain. And now, Lady Juliana whispered, "She's pleased with you, beauty. Now, kiss my boot quickly and drop down on your knees and kiss the grass before the pavilion. Do it with spirit, my girl." Beauty obeyed without hesitation, and as if it were water washing through her, she felt again that calm, that sense of, what was it? Release? Resignation? "Nothing can save me," she thought. All the sounds about her mingled in a din. Her buttocks seemed to glow with pain, and she imagined a great light emanating from them. And then she was back on her feet, and another hard blow sent her crying into the dark cellar chamber of the castle. Slaves everywhere were thrown over barrels, their sore bodies being washed quickly with cool water. Beauty felt its flow over her abraded flesh, and then the soft toweling. At once, Leon had her on her feet. "You've pleased the queen marvelously. Your form was magnificent. You were born for the bridal path." "But the prince?" Beauty whispered, and she felt dizzy and mistakenly envisioned Prince Alexei. "Not tonight for you, lovely one. He is quite busy with 1,000 amusements, and you must be placed where you can serve and rest, as the exertion of the bridal path is quite enough in one night for a novice." He unfastened her braids and brushed out her hair in ripples. She was breathing deeply and evenly now, and bent her forehead against his chest. "Was I truly graceful?" "Pricelessly beautiful," he whispered. "And Lady Juliana is thoroughly in love with you." But now he ordered her down on her knees and told her to follow him. She was suddenly out in the night again, on the warm grass with the noisy crowd all about her. She saw the table legs, the gathered gowns, hands moving in the shadows. There was a shriek of laughter nearby, and then she saw before her a long banquet table covered with sweets, fruit, and pastries. Two princes attended it, and decorative pillars stood at both ends to which slave girls were affixed, their hands above their heads, their feet chained slightly apart at the bottom. One of these was removed as Beauty approached, and she was quickly fastened in the girl's place, standing firmly, her head and swollen buttocks pressed against the pillar. She could see the whole feast around her, even with her lids lowered, and she felt herself quite firmly bound in place, unable to move. And it did not matter. The worst was over. Even when a passing lord stopped to smile at her and pinch her nipples, she did not care. She was amazed to see the little brass bells had been taken away. She was so weary she hadn't noticed. Leon was still nearby at her ear, and she was about to murmur some question as to how long she would be here, when quite distinctly, in front of her, she saw Prince Alexei. He was as beautiful as she had remembered, his auburn brown hair curling against the hollows of his handsome face, his soft brown eyes fixed on her. His lips spread easily in a smile, though he drew up to the table and gave his pitcher to be filled to one of those in attendance. Beauty stared furtively out of the corner of her eye. She saw his thick, hard sex and the lush hair around it. The vision of the page, Felix, sucking it, filled her with sudden passion. She must have moaned or stirred because Prince Alexei, glancing up at the distant pavilion before he bent over the table to gather some sweet, suddenly kissed her on the ear, brushing Leon aside as if he were nothing. "You behave yourself, you wicked prince," said Leon. But it was not playful. "I shall see you tomorrow night, my dearest," Prince Alexei whispered with a smile. "And don't be frightened of the queen, for I shall be with you." Beauty's mouth quivered on the verge of a cry,
but he was gone. And now Leon had drawn up to her ear again, cupping his hand as he whispered.
You're to see the queen tomorrow night for a few hours in her quarters.
Oh, no, no, Beauty wailed, tossing her head from side to side. Don't be foolish. This is very good. You could not wish for better.
And as he spoke, he slipped his hand between her legs and pinched her lips gently. She felt herself grow warm there. I was on the pavilion while you were running. The queen was impressed in spite of herself, he went on. And the prince said you had always shown such form and spirit. And again he pleaded for you, and that the queen should not censure his passion. He agreed then not to see you tonight, but to have a dozen or so new princesses paraded before him.
Don't tell me any more, Beauty cried softly.
No, but don't you see? The queen was enthralled with you, and he knew it. She watched you closely as you ran, impatient for you to come to the pavilion. And it was she who said perhaps she should taste your charms herself to see if you were not as spoilt and vain as she had supposed. She will have you in her quarters tomorrow night after supper.
Beauty cried softly, too spiritless to answer.
But, Beauty, this is a great privilege. There are slaves here who serve years without ever being noticed by the queen. You shall have your full opportunity to enchant her. And you shall, my dear. You shall. You cannot fail to do so. And the prince has been clever for once. He has not worn his heart for all to see it.
But what will she do to me? Beauty whimpered. And Prince Alexei, will he see all of it? Oh, what will she do?
Oh, she shall only make a plaything of you, of course, and you shall try to please her.
The Queen's Chamber. Half the night was gone before the queen came. Beauty had dozed, then awakened again and again, to find herself still chained in the ornate bedchamber as if in a nightmare. She was bound to the wall, her ankles cuffed in leather, her wrists up over her head, her buttocks pushed against the cold stone behind her. At first the stone had felt good. Now and then she twisted to let the air touch the soreness. Of course the abraded flesh was much healed from last night's ordeal on the bridal path, but she still suffered, and she knew tonight she was surely destined for more torment. Not the least of it, however, was her own passion. What had the prince awakened in her that after one night of no satisfaction she should feel so wanton? It was the stirring between her legs that first brought her out of sleep in the slaves' hall, and now and then she felt it as she stood waiting. The room itself lay in shadow and unbroken stillness. Dozens of thick candles burned in their heavy gilded holders, the wax spilling in rivulets through the traceries of gold. The bed, with its tapestried draperies, appeared a gaping cavern. Beauty closed her eyes. She opened them again. And when she was again on the verge of a dream, she heard the heavy double doors thrown open and suddenly saw the tall, slender figure of the queen materialized before her. The queen moved to the center of the carpet. Her blue velvet gown cleaved to her girdled hips before flaring gently to cover her black pointed slippers. She gazed at Beauty with narrow black eyes tipped up at the ends to give her a cruel expression. And then she smiled, her white cheeks dimpling, though an instant before they had seemed as hard as white porcelain. Beauty had lowered her eyes at once. Petrified, she watched covertly as the queen moved away from her and seated herself at an ornate dressing table, her back to a high mirror. With an offhanded gesture, she dismissed the ladies who stood at the door. A figure remained there, and Beauty, afraid to look, was certain it was Prince Alexei. So her tormentor had come, Beauty thought. Her heart pounded in her ears, becoming a roar rather than a pulse.
and she felt the bonds holding her helpless so that she could not have defended herself against anyone or anything. Her breasts felt heavy, and the moisture between her legs greatly agitated her. Would the queen discover it and use it to further punish her? Yet, mingled with her fear, was some sense of her helplessness which had come over her the night before and never left her. She knew how she must appear. She was afraid, but she could do nothing, and she was accepting it. Maybe this was a new strength, this acceptance. And she needed all her strength, for she was alone with this woman who had no love for her. Without words, she evoked a memory of the prince's love, of Lady Juliana's affectionate touch and warm words of praise, even of Leon's caressing hands. But this was the queen. The great, powerful queen who ruled all and who felt nothing but coldness and fascination for her. She shivered against her will. The throbbing between her legs seemed to slacken and then to grow slightly more intense. Surely the queen was staring at her. And the queen could make her suffer. And there would be no prince to witness it. No court. No one. Only Prince Alexei. She saw him now, moving out of the shadows, a naked form exquisitely proportioned, the dark golden skin making him seem a polished statue. "Wine," said the queen, and he was moving to pour it for her. He knelt at her side, and he placed the two-handled cup in her hands, and as she drank, Beauty looked up and saw Prince Alexei smiling directly at her. She was so startled she almost made a little gasp. His large brown eyes were full of the same gentle affection he'd shown her last night when he passed her at the banquet table. Then he made his mouth into a silent kiss before Beauty looked away in consternation. Could he feel affection for her? Real affection, even desire, as she felt desire for him when she first saw him? Oh, how she ached suddenly to touch him, to feel just once for an instant that silken skin, that hard chest, those dark, rose-colored nipples. How exquisite they were on that flat chest, those little nodules that seemed so unmasculine, giving him a touch of feminine vulnerability. How had the queen punished them, she wondered. Were they ever clamped and adorned as her breasts had been? They were piquant, those little nipples. But the throbbing between her legs warned her, and it took an act of will for her not to move her hips. "Undress me," the queen said. And from beneath her half-masked lids, Beauty watched as Prince Alexei obeyed the command skillfully and deftly. How clumsy she had been 2 nights ago, and how patient the prince had been with her. He used his hands but seldom. His first duty was with his teeth to unsnap the hooks of the queen's dress, and this he did, quickly gathering it as it fell down around her. Beauty was astonished to see the queen's full white breasts naked under a thin chemise of lace. And then Prince Alexei removed her ornate mantle of white silk to show the queen's black hair hanging loose in ripples over her shoulders. He took the garments away. Then he came back to remove, with his teeth, the queen's slippers. He kissed her naked feet before he took the shoes out of sight, and then he brought back to the queen a sheer nightgown trimmed in white lace, the fabric a lustrous cream color. It was very full and pressed into 1,000 pleats. And as the queen rose, Prince Alexei pulled down the chemise that she wore, and rising to his full height, put the nightgown over the queen's shoulders. She slipped her arms into the deep, pleated bag sleeves, and the garment fell about her like a bell. And then, with his back to Beauty, Prince Alexei, on his knees again, tied 12 little bows of white ribbon to close the front of the gown to its hem above the queen's naked insteps. As he bent over for the last of these, the queen's hands played idly with his auburn hair,
and Beauty found herself staring at his reddened buttocks, where he had obviously been recently punished. His thighs, his tight, hard calves, all of this inflamed her. "Pull back the curtains of the bed," the queen said,
"and bring her to me."
Beauty's pulse deafened her. It seemed there was a pressure in her ears, in her throat. Yet she heard the tapestries being drawn back. She saw the queen recline on the coverlet amid a nest of silk pillows. The queen looked younger now that her hair was free, and her face was without a trace of age as she stared at Beauty. Those eyes were as placid as if they had been painted in her face with enamel. Then, with a shock of unwelcome pleasure, Beauty saw Prince Alexei before her. He obliterated the vision of the menacing queen. He bent to untie her ankles, and she felt his fingers deliberately caress her. When he rose in front of her again, his hands up to free her wrists, she smelled the perfume of his hair and skin. And there seemed something utterly lush about him. For all his hardness, the squareness of his build, he seemed some great, spicy delicacy to her. And she found herself staring right into his eyes. He smiled and let his lips touch her forehead. And they stayed, secretly pressed to her forehead, until her wrists were entirely free and he was holding them. Then he pushed her gently down on her knees and gestured to the bed.
"No, simply bring her," said the queen.
And Prince Alexei lifted Beauty and threw her over his shoulder as easily as a page might have done, or the prince himself when he took her from her father's castle. His flesh felt hot beneath her, and thrown over his back as she was, she boldly kissed his sore buttocks. Then she was laid down on the bed and realized she was beside the queen, looking up into her eyes, as the queen, who rested on her elbow, looked down at her. Beauty's breath left her in rapid gasps. The queen seemed quite enormous to her. And now she perceived a great resemblance to the prince, only, as always, the queen seemed infinitely colder. Yet there was about her red mouth something which might have once been called sweetness. She had thick eyelashes, a firm chin, and as she smiled, dimples showed in her cheeks. Her face was heart-shaped. Flustered, Beauty closed her eyes, biting her lip so hard she might have cut it.
"Look at me," said the queen. "I want to see your eyes, naturally. I want no modesty from you now. Do you understand me?"
"Yes, Your Highness," Beauty answered. She wondered if the queen might hear her heartbeat. The bed was soft beneath her, the pillows soft, and she found herself staring at the queen's great breasts, the dark circle of a nipple beneath the gown, before she looked at the queen's eyes again obediently. A shock passed through her, collecting in a knot in her belly. The queen merely studied her in great absorption. Her teeth showed perfectly white between her lips, and those eyes, slanted, long, were black to the core and revealed nothing.
"Sit there, Alexei," the queen said without looking away.
And Beauty saw him take his position at the foot of the bed, with his arms folded on his chest and his back to the bedpost.
"Little plaything,"
the queen said under her breath to Beauty. "And now I understand perhaps why Lady Juliana is so enraptured over you." She ran her hand over Beauty's face, her cheeks, her eyelids. She pinched Beauty's mouth. She smoothed back her hair, and then she slapped Beauty's breasts to the right and to the left and again. Beauty's mouth quivered, but she made no sound. She kept her hands still at her sides. The queen was like a light that threatened to blind her. If she thought about it, lying here so near the queen, she would be overcome with panic. The queen's hand moved over her belly and her thighs. It pinched the flesh of her thighs, and then the backs of her legs at the calves. And in spite of herself,
Beauty felt a tingling everywhere she was touched, as if the hand itself had some dreadful power. She felt hatred for the queen suddenly, more violently than she had felt it for Lady Juliana. But then the queen commenced to examine, slowly, Beauty's nipples. The fingers of the queen's right hand turned each nipple this way and that, testing the soft circle of skin around it. Beauty's breath became uneven, and she felt the moisture between her legs as though a grape had been squeezed there. It seemed the queen was monstrously bigger than she, and as strong as a man. Or was it only that to struggle against the queen was unthinkable? Beauty tried to regain some calm, to think of her feeling of release on the bridal path. But it eluded her. It had been fragile all along. Now it was nothing. "Look at me," the queen commanded gently again. And Beauty realized as she looked up that she was crying. "Spread your legs," the queen ordered. At once Beauty obeyed. "Now she will see," Beauty thought. "It will be as bad as when Lord Gregory saw, and Prince Alexei will see." The queen laughed. "I said spread your legs," she said, and gave Beauty's thighs fierce, stinging slaps. Beauty spread her legs much wider and felt graceless as she did so. When her knees were pressed down to the coverlet on either side, she thought she could not endure the ignominy of it. She stared at the coffered ceiling of the bed above her and realized that the queen was opening her sex as Leon had done. Beauty bit down on her cries, and Prince Alexei witnessed all of it. She remembered his kisses, his smiles. The lights of the room shimmered, and she felt her own shuddering as the queen's fingers felt the moisture in this secret, exposed spot, playing with Beauty's pubic lips, smoothing the pubic hair, and finally catching a lock of it to pull and tease idly. It seemed the queen took both her thumbs and wrenched Beauty open. Beauty tried to keep her hips still. She wanted to rise to escape, like some miserable princess in the training hall who could not endure being so examined. Yet she did not protest. Her whimpers were faint and uncertain. The queen commanded her to turn over. Blessed concealment, that she could hide her face in the pillows. But those cool, commanding hands were playing with her buttocks now, opening them, touching her anus. "Oh, please," she thought desperately, and she knew that her shoulders shook with her silent crying. "Oh, this is dreadful, dreadful." With the prince, finally she had known what was wanted. On the bridal path, finally she had been told what was wanted. But what did this wicked queen want of her? That she suffer? That she cringe? That she offer herself, or merely endure? And the woman despised her. The queen massaged her flesh, prodding it, testing it as if for thickness, softness, resilience. She tested Beauty's thighs in the same manner, and then pushed Beauty's knees so far apart and high on the bed that Beauty's hips rose and she felt she was squatting, sprawled apart over the coverlet, her sex protruding, hanging down. Her buttocks surely split so that she resembled a ripe fruit. The queen's hand was under her sex as if weighing it, feeling the roundness and heaviness of the lips, pinching them. "Arch your back," said the queen, "and lift your buttocks, little cat. Little cat in heat." Beauty obeyed, her eyes flooded with tears of shame. She was trembling violently as she took a deep breath, and against her will felt the queen's fingers commanding her passion, squeezing the flame so it burned hotter. Surely Beauty's pubic lips were swelling, their juices flowing, no matter how bitterly she struggled against it. She did not want to give anything to this wicked woman, this witch of a queen. To the prince she would yield, to Lord Gregory, to nameless and faceless lords and ladies who showered her with compliments,
But to this woman who despised her?
But the queen had sat back on the bed beside Beauty. And hastily she gathered up Beauty as if she were a floppy doll and threw her over her lap, her face away from Prince Alexei, her buttocks surely still exposed to his scrutiny. Beauty gave an open-mouthed moan, her breasts rubbed against the coverlet, her sex throbbing against the queen's thigh. It was as if she were some toy in the queen's hands. Yes, it was exactly like being a toy. Only she was alive. She breathed. She suffered. She could imagine how she appeared to Prince Alexei. The queen lifted her hair. She ran a finger down Beauty's back to the tip of her spine.
All the rituals, the queen said in a low voice.
The bridal path, the stakes in the garden, the wheels, and then the hunts in the maze, and all the other clever games devised for my pleasure. But do I ever know a slave until I have this intimacy with the slave? The intimacy of the slave over my lap, ready for punishment? Tell me, Alexei, shall I spank her with my hand only to sustain this intimacy? Feel her stinging flesh, its warmth, as I watch it change color? Shall I use the silverback mirror? Or one of a dozen paddles that are all excellent for the purpose? What do you prefer, Alexei, when you are over my lap? What is it you hope for, even as you are crying? You may hurt your hand if you spank her that way, came Prince Alexei's calm answer. May I get you the silver mirror?
Ah, but you do not answer my question, the queen said.
And do get me the mirror. I shall not spank her with it. Rather, I shall see her face with it, as I spank her. In a blur, Beauty saw Prince Alexei move to the dressing table, and then before her, propped against a silk pillow, was the mirror, tilted so she could see the queen's smooth, white face in it distinctly. The dark eyes terrified her. The queen's smile terrified her. But I shall show her nothing, Beauty thought desperately, shutting her eyes, the tears squeezed out down her cheeks. Surely there is something superior about the open hand, the queen was saying, her left hand on Beauty's neck, massaging it. She slipped it down under Beauty's breasts, and pushing them closer to one another, touched both nipples with her long fingers. Have I not spanked you with my hand as hard as any man, Alexei?
To be sure, Your Highness, he answered softly.
He was behind Beauty again. Perhaps he had taken his place against the bedpost. Now clasp your hands in the small of your back and keep them there, said the queen. And she closed her hand over Beauty's buttocks, just as she closed her other hand over Beauty's breasts.
And acknowledge my commands to you, princess.
Yes, Your Highness. Beauty struggled to respond, but to her further shame, her voice broke into sobs, and she shivered, trying to restrain them.
And be quieter than that, said the queen sharply.
The queen commenced to spank her. One great, hard slap after another fell on her buttocks, and if a paddle had ever been worse, she could not remember it. She tried to be still, to be quiet, to show nothing. Nothing, as she repeated the word over and over in her mind. But she could feel herself writhing. It was as Leon had said with the bridle path. You always struggle as if you could escape the paddle, squirm away from it. And she heard herself crying out suddenly in gasps as the slaps stung her. The queen's hand seemed immense and hard and heavier than the paddle. It shaped itself to her as it spanked her, and she realized she was frantic, full of tears and cries, and all of this for the queen to see in her cursed mirror. Yet she could not stop it. And the queen's other hand pinched her breasts, stretched her nipples one at a time, letting them go and stretching them again as the spanks went on and on until Beauty was sobbing. Anything would have been better. Rushing through the hall at the end of Lord Gregory's paddle. The bridle path.
even the bridle path was better, for there was some escape in the movement. And here there was nothing but the pain. Her inflamed buttocks lay bare for the queen, who now sought out new spots, spanking on the left buttock and then the right, and then covering Beauty's thighs with smacks, while Beauty's buttocks seemed to swell and throb unbearably. The queen must tire. The queen must stop, Beauty thought. But she had thought this only moments before, and it went on so that Beauty's hips were rising and falling, and she found herself squirming to the side, only to be rewarded with sounder blows, more rapid blows, as if the queen were growing ever more violent. It was as when the prince had beaten her with the strap. It was becoming more frenzied. Now the queen worked on the very bottom of her buttocks, that portion which Lady Juliana had so deliberately lifted on her paddle, and she spanked hard and long on either side before moving up again and to the side, and then to Beauty's thighs and back again. Beauty clenched her teeth to stifle her cries. She opened her eyes in frantic, silent pleas, seeing only the queen's hard profile in the mirror. The queen's eyes were narrowed, her mouth twisted, and then, suddenly, she gazed through the mirror at Beauty, though she never ceased punishing her. Beauty's hands broke their firm clasp and struggled to cover her buttocks, but the queen at once moved them aside. "You dare," she whispered, and Beauty clasped them tight again, sobbing into the coverlet as the spanking continued. Then the queen's hand lay on the burning flesh without motion. It seemed the fingers were still cold, yet they burned. And Beauty could not control her racing breath or her tears, and she would not open her eyes again. "You shall tender me your apology for that little slip of decorum," said the queen.
I, Beauty stammered.
"I am sorry, my queen."
"I am sorry, my queen," Beauty whispered frantically.
"I deserve only your punishment for it, my queen. I deserve only your punishment for it, my queen."
"Yes," the queen whispered, "and you shall have it." "But, all in all," the queen sighed, "was she not good, Prince Alexei?
Very well behaved, your highness, I should think, but I await your judgment." The queen laughed. She pulled Beauty up roughly. "Turn around and sit in my lap," she said. Beauty was astonished. She at once obeyed and realized she was facing Prince Alexei. But he did not matter to her in these moments. Shaken, sore, she sat shivering on the queen's thighs, the silk of the queen's gown cool under her burning buttocks, the queen's left arm cradling her. The queen's right hand examined her nipples, and Beauty looked down through her tears to see those white fingers again pulling the nipples.
"I had not thought to find you so obedient," said the queen, pressing Beauty to her ample breasts, Beauty's hips against the queen's smooth stomach. Beauty felt tiny as well as helpless, as if she were nothing in this woman's arms, nothing but something small. A child, perhaps. No, not even a child. The queen's voice grew caressing. "You are sweet. Sweet as Lady Juliana told me you were," she said softly in Beauty's ear. Beauty bit her lip.
"Your highness," she whispered, but she did not know what to say.
"My son has trained you well, and you show great perception." The queen's hand plunged down between Beauty's legs and felt the sex which had never grown cold or dry during all of the worst of the spanking, and Beauty shut her eyes.
"Ah, now why are you so afraid of my hand when it touches you gently?" And the queen bent and kissed Beauty's tears, tasting them on Beauty's cheeks and on her eyelids. "Sugar and salt," she said. Beauty broke into a fresh shower of sobs. The hand between her legs massaged the most moist portion of her.
and she knew that her face was flushed and the pain and the pleasure mingled. She felt overpowered. Her head fell back against the queen's shoulder, and her mouth went slack, and she realized the queen was kissing her throat. And she murmured some strange words that were not words to the queen, some plea. "Poor little slave," said the queen. "Poor little obedient slave. I wanted to send you home to get rid of you, to rid my son of his passion for you, my son who is now as enchanted as you were before, under the spell of the one whom he released from the spell, as if all life were a series of enchantments. But you are as perfect in temperament as he said you were, as perfect as more trained slaves. And yet you are fresher, sweeter." Beauty gasped as the pleasure between her legs washed through her, mounting and mounting. She felt her swollen breasts might burst, and her buttocks, as always, throbbed so that she felt every inch of the abraded flesh relentlessly. "Now come, did I spank you so very hard? Tell me." She took Beauty by the chin and turned her so that Beauty looked into her eyes. They were huge and black and fathomless. The lashes curled upwards, and there seemed a great casing of glass over the eyes, so deep they were, so brilliant. "Well, answer me," said the queen with her red lips, and she placed her finger in Beauty's mouth and tugged on her lower lip. "Answer me."
"It was hard. Hard, my queen," Beauty said meekly.
"Well, yes, perhaps for such fresh little buttocks. But you make Prince Alexei smile with your innocence."
Beauty turned as if bidden to do so, but when she gazed at Prince Alexei, she did not see him smiling. Rather, he was merely looking at her with the strangest expression. It was both remote and loving. And then he looked to the queen without haste or fear, and let his lips lengthen in a smile as she seemed to wish of him. But the queen had tipped back Beauty's head again. She kissed Beauty. The queen's rippling hair fell down around her, full of perfume, and for the first time Beauty felt the velvety white skin of the queen's face, and she realized the queen's breasts were pressed against her. Beauty's hips moved forward. She started to gasp, but just before it became too much for her, this shock penetrating to her wet, throbbing sex, the queen suddenly pushed her down and drew back, smiling. She held Beauty's thighs. Beauty's legs were open, and the hungry little sex wanted for all the world for the legs to be crushed closed against it. The pleasure subsided slightly, back into that great, never-ending rhythm of craving. Beauty moaned, her brows knit in a frown, and the queen suddenly pushed her off, slapping Beauty's face so hard that Beauty cried out before she could stop herself. "My queen, she is so young and tender," said Prince Alexei.
"Don't try my patience," the queen answered.
Beauty lay face down on the bed, crying. "Rather, ring for Felix, and have him bring Lady Juliana. I know how young and tender is my little slave, and how much she has to learn, and that she must be punished for her small disobedience. But that is not what concerns me. I should see more of her spirit, her efforts to please, and, well, I have promised Lady Juliana." It did not make any difference how hard Beauty cried, they would proceed, and Prince Alexei could not stop them. Beauty heard Felix come, she heard the queen walking about the room, and finally, when Beauty's tears were now a steady, silent flow, the queen said, "Get down from the bed and prepare yourself to greet Lady Juliana."